Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all lines are in listen-only mode until the question-and-answer session of today's call. At that time, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star one. Today's conference has been recorded. If you have any objections, please disconnect at this time. I would now like to turn the meeting over to Ms. Leslie Gordon. You may begin.
Thank you, operator, and welcome to all the reporters who have joined us today. We will have four speakers today, and I'll reintroduce them each as they're ready to speak. But as a quick overview, volcanologist Wendy Stovall will be speaking on behalf of the U.S. Geological Survey Hawaiian Volcano Observatory. Ashley Sears will be speaking for National Weather Service. Jessica Farrakane will be speaking for Hawaii Volcanoes National Park. And Ross Birch will be speaking for the Hawaii Island Visitor Bureau. So let me introduce the first speaker. It is Wendy Stovall. Wendy's the usual way. Stovall is S as in Sam, T as in Tom, O-V-A-L-L. Go ahead, Wendy.
Hi, everybody. I am glad to be on the call with you today. I just want to give you a quick update about what's going on at Kilauea Volcano. So the eruptions are still continuing from the two sites at both the summit and in the Lower East Rift Zone. And the Lower East Rift Zone vents have activity has started to move from the furthest eastern vents, and it started to kind of go back towards the west. So we're still seeing a little bit of activity, which is the vent that's furthest to the east. So at 17, I think I said 17, but here we are again, 17. The fountaining is very low at that vent, and there is no progression of the flow front. So it's still just in the same location that it has been on our maps for several days. Moving a little bit to the west, 22 is active, 19 is active, 6. And then 5 or 13 in that area, and 23. So overnight and into the morning, we're seeing just a really long line of low fountains occurring from these fissures. Number 22 seems to still have the main focus of activity, with heights going up to, again, about 200 feet above the vent level for the fountain heights. And then the fountains a little bit further to the west from there are producing heights of closer to 60 feet or so, 60 to 100 feet. And the lava flows from those are issuing towards the south, and the ocean entry is still active. It has started to propagate towards the west. So there's a wide swath of abandoned ocean entry channel on the eastern edge of where the ocean entry is now. There are the area to the north of the active fissure line is relatively blocked by there's spatter ramparts. So it's like walls of lava that get built up as the fountains are bubbling out and shooting up the spatter, and the spatter's landing on this wall. So it's creating a kind of a blockade from lava moving to the north in the areas, at least through the 2019-6 fissure area. And moving to the summit, we saw an explosion last night at just after 10 p.m. that pushed up ash plume to about 8,000 or 9,000 feet above sea level. That was captured in radar imagery. Sometime this week, we're going to get some more detection equipment installed at the summit. There's going to be an antenna that will capture electric charges, so that will help us to determine what's going on in the plume. I don't have a whole lot of information about that, so I won't be able to answer specific questions. And I'm not sure when that will be coming, but that's just another way that we're going to be detecting the summit activity. Earthquakes at the summit are still elevated, and the summit is still subsiding. There are explosive events that push up the plume at least two times a day, and people will be experiencing ash fall downwind. There are smaller explosive events that are also occurring intermixed in between there, and they are still producing ash, so there's just kind of a, it's not a continuous outpouring of ash, but there's just pulses of more vigorous ash and less vigorous ash that's coming out of the summit. And then, sorry, going back down to the lower East Rift Zone, the earthquake activity is, it's pretty stable. It's just continuing on about the same rate that we have been seeing over the past few days. And deformation is showing that the rift zone is not inflating per se or deflating, but it is widening to accommodate the magma beneath the system. That's it for the geologic update. Leslie, we can move on.
Sorry, mute button. Thank you, Wendy. Yesterday you spoke briefly about the methane explosions, and since then we've gotten quite a few emails from reporters asking about methane explosions and about the blue flames that we posted on the our Facebook page. Could you very briefly say something about that again today? I think some of those people may be listening on the line.
Yeah, sure. So when methane burns, it burns with these blue flames. So you see an image on our website and on our Facebook page that's showing these blue flames. They're coming up through road cracks. So what's going on is that when lava interacts with a vegetated ground surface, it's going to burn the ground surface, burn the vegetation, and that causes methane gas to form. The methane gas will flow through the ground, through cracks that are already existing, and will come up wherever there is a place for them to come up. So in the instance of the images on our website, they're coming up through cracks in the road. People have seen them, you know, these blue flames in vegetated areas that are several feet away from the fronts of the lava flows, and they're definitely something to be aware of, because if the methane gets trapped underground and it's ignited, then it can cause a very large explosion, which will throw blocks several meters away from the location where from the explosion site.
Thank you, Wendy. For our second speaker, I'd like to introduce Jessica Farrakhane with the Hawaii Volcanoes National Park. Jessica is spelled the usual way, and Farrakhane is F-E-R-R-A-C-A-N-E. Go ahead, Jessica.
Good morning, everybody. Can everybody hear me okay? Just testing this. I'm on a headset.
Yes, we can hear you.
Beautiful. Okay. Well, we had some good news today. I just sent out a news release that our Kahuku unit, located in the Kau District about an hour south of the park's main entrance, has increased the days of in the week that it's open. So Kahuku is now open 5 days a week, and that starts today. News release went out a few minutes ago with photos. If anybody is on the call that wants that news release that didn't get it, I am happy to send that your way. The only other update we have really is that we're continuing to support the state's Department of Transportation on providing emergency access evacuation route on Chana Craters Road. Otherwise, pretty much the same.
Thank you, Jessica. Our third speaker today is Ashley Sears. Ashley is a meteorologist and the National Weather Service's emergency response specialist. And Ashley is A-S-H-L-E-Y Sears, S as in Sam, E-A-R-S, just like the store. Go ahead, Ashley.
Good afternoon, everyone. Can you hear me okay?
I think so.
Perfect. Well, good afternoon. Speaking with the weather, we will continue to see a similar pattern that we've been seeing for the past couple of days, so continuing that trade wind pattern, and we're going to see that through this coming weekend. This results in basically persisting northeast winds. Under this pattern, if an explosion occurs at the summit of Kilauea, as we actually saw about an hour ago, ash will mainly impact the immediate summit area and areas to the southwest, including Highway 11 heading down to Pahala. We did see a small explosion per radar satellite imagery about an hour ago, and we did have reports of ash up to about 5,000 feet and then heading down Highway 11 to the southwest. Overall, though, remains fairly confined to that area. A special weather statement does remain in effect until further notice for the southwestern portions of the island to account for impacts from these sporadic explosions. As a reminder, avoid excessive exposure to ash, which is an eye and respiratory irritant. Those also with respiratory sensitivities should take extra precaution to minimize any exposure. And then heading down to the fissures, we will also see daytime winds from the northeast, generally 8 to 15 miles per hour down there. They're a little gustier than what we see up at the summit. You could see some gusts to around 20 miles per hour during the afternoon hours. During the overnight hours, the winds will back to a more of a northwest flow as we start to get a drainage flow setting up, though the winds during the overnight hours are slightly weaker, around 5 to 10 miles per hour. The combo of this wind flow and then the continuing release of the sulfur dioxide, we do expect to see fog to continue to form each day in the immediate vicinity of the fissures and impact areas, mainly in the fissure area and to the south and west with that northeast flow. Again, this pattern is expected to continue through the coming weekend.
Thank you, Ashley, very much. Our fourth and final speaker for this morning is Ross Birch. Ross is the Executive Director of the Island of Hawaii Visitor Bureau. Go ahead.
Good morning. A lot of this may be some repeat information, but we're staying steady. The numbers we're seeing for month to date for May arrivals to the island are actually 25% up year to date over last year. Staying steady, staying right on pace for what we anticipated, which is great news that we've got those arrivals still coming in. There has been cancellations. There has been a lowering in booking pace moving forward. Quite honestly, we won't know exactly what those numbers are or even what May exact numbers will be until the end of June or when our statistical research is completed for that. The greatest impact, as mentioned before, was the cruise lines not coming into port in both Hilo and Kona. Good news is NCL has announced that they're going to reinstate Kona for next week, Wednesday the 30th, and returning into Hilo on June 6th. So that's great news for them to come back in. And all of our partners on island that are in those areas are excited about this. And even on the Hilo side, unfortunately, with the closing of Hawaii Volcanoes National Park, the good news is all our partners have created new great tours that are including botanical gardens, the waterfalls, potentially even Parker Ranch, and either, you know, many of the other sites that we have on the island. So they're changing their business plans and really switching it up to accommodate those cruise visitors that would be coming to the island. We do still have numerous groups that are on island currently enjoying their time. The weather's been beautiful for most of the island, and we have a specific group of meeting planners that we're assisting in hosting here on island along the Kohala Coast here, and of those meeting planners, 25% of them are first-timers to the island and are having a fabulous time while they're here. That's all I have for today.
Thank you, Russ. And I just want to add that as a mainland resident myself, I think there are still a lot of people who don't understand how large Hawaii Island is, let alone how large the state is. And it would help if reporters said it's still a fine place to visit, that these effects that we're talking about are all very local to Kilauea Volcano, not the whole island and not the whole state.
That has been our greatest challenge, and I appreciate you putting that plug in for it, Mahalo.
You're welcome. I'm a fan. I think now we are ready to open this up for questions. I would ask each reporter to please stick to one question at a time so we can get through as many people as possible, and we've only got time for about 15 minutes of questions today. So, operator, we're ready for the first question.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1, record your name and affiliation. Your name and affiliation is required to introduce your question. To withdraw your question, you may press star 2. Once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1. One moment, please, for our first question. Our first question comes from Tom Kalish, Tribune Herald. Your line is now open.
Yeah, thank you. I was curious to how high those fissures are building up. I'm not referring to the spattering, but like the formation of cinder cones and how tall those are getting.
That's a good question. I don't have the specific answer for that right now. I was out in the field 2 days ago. Yeah, I don't remember what day it is. Anyway, when we were out there, it was really just forming, and it was already up to about 30 feet high on one side. So I can put a request in with the field crew to get back to me, and maybe I'll have an answer for you before the end of the call. This is Wendy Stovall, by the way. Did that help?
Yeah, thank you.
Okay.
Our next question comes from Steve Gorman with Reuters. Your line is now open.
Yeah, hi. I just want to know about the major eruptions or the larger eruptions. So the civil defense said that there was one at 3:45 this morning. I think you mentioned one at about 10 o'clock last night. and we have a photographer said he just saw another eruption happening, I guess, in the last hour. Maybe the one you also mentioned that went up to about 5,000 feet. So would those be the last two sort of significantly sized eruptions today that we know about?
This is Wendy Stovall. I am not sure. It sounded like the person from NOAA had more recent knowledge than I do, so maybe I'll let her answer that question.
So I was made aware, sorry, this is Ashley Sears with the Weather Service. I was briefed from the forecast office that there had been an explosion noted via the radar satellite and I guess the webcams around 10 o'clock, and they had reissued the special weather statement for the concerns of ash to the southwest. Other than that smaller explosion, which it did show, again, according to radar satellite imagery, that it made up to around 5,000 feet. Other than that one, I was not made aware of any other ones other than the ones that you mentioned.
Okay. I mean, but we have no reason to believe that what the civil defense put out today about the 3:45 a.m. eruption, which produced an ash plume to 8,000 feet, there's no reason to believe that's not accurate, right?
That is accurate. I can say for certain that is accurate. This is Wendy Stovall.
Okay. All right. Thanks. So, and then if there's been another one seen since then, that's another one that we've seen. But there's another one you said just happened about an hour ago. Is that right? Is that what the report said? It went to about 5,000 feet.
Yes, sir. That would be different.
Okay.
That was yes.
A different ash plume. Right. Okay.
This is Wendy Stovall again. I just want to clarify what's going on with these ash plumes. Not to get you into the weeds of the way that we've been classifying them, but there's two different types that we're seeing. One of them puts out a signal in our geospatial data, and the other ones do not. They just produce ash. The ones that put out the geospatial signal, those are always putting up higher ash plumes. The ones that we can't necessarily see as well with our instrumentation, but we can see well with our eyes, are putting up plumes. But that 5,000 above sea level one that you just mentioned is one of the ones that did not produce the geophysical signal.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you for that.
Our next question comes from Jim Roop with Westwood One News. Your line is now open.
Thank you. Hi, good morning. I was wondering if maybe Wendy could answer this question. How much is all of this changing the geography of that area? Like through across Highway 137, there's this 20-foot-high lava barrier now that created a dead end, I guess. Can that be bulldozed through and that road opened up again? Are the neighborhoods ever going to come back? Can people rebuild on top of all this? Will this all have to be remapped? I know that's like a several-point question, but how much is this changing things?
Hi, Wendy Stovall, USGS. I can answer it relatively simply. So definitely changes are being seen. We do have some scientists out there from the DOI and from the USGS that are doing drone footage. They're able to use that drone footage to make maps that are showing the new topography. So they're really doing like real-time topographic maps. We don't have any of those created yet to be able to share. They're still in the data processing phase. So yes, the whole landscape is changing. As far as what's going to go on with the neighborhood and the roads, I definitely can't answer that. That would probably be something that would need to go to the state or Department of Transportation.
Got it. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Our next question comes from Kristen Consulio with Honolulu Star Advertiser. Your line is now open.
Hi, Wendy. There was some indication this morning that there's something going on at Highway 130, and I wondered if you could give us some details on what's happening there. I don't know. There was very little details this morning.
Hi, Wendy Stovall. I don't have any additional details. I was just trying to look through the notes to see if there's anything more recent. So because you asked, I will continue to look, and in addition to getting the cone heights on these fountains, I will also get more info about Highway 130 before the call's over, so within the next 6 minutes.
Thank you.
Okay, of course.
Our next question is from Tom Callis, Tribune Herald. Your line is now open.
Yeah, I was wondering if anyone can characterize the extent of ash accumulation downwind of the summit and in volcano, if any.
This is Wendy Stovall, USGS. We don't have any exact numbers of ash accumulation, but this is where I'm going to go ahead and make a plug for something. We have a whole new resource on our website about collecting ash, so it would be wonderful if people who are experiencing ash fall will report that they're experiencing ash fall on our website. It's in the 2018 activity resource page. So we have a little section that we've created specifically for Hawaii. We spun this up really quickly because all of our, there's been a lot of ash that has blown into areas in Alaska, and so this was something that was utilized by our Alaska Volcano Observatory for several years. So there's two parts to it. There's a did ash fall, which is similar to the did you feel it of the earthquake hazards program, and there's also instructions for collecting ash. And so people who are experiencing ash fall can do collection process, and that will help us to better get kind of analytical information about how much ash is actually impacting the communities downwind. I don't know of any of our scientists right now that have gone down and checked on the ash accumulation rates. So that's something that maybe I'll follow up on, and we can talk about that tomorrow when we have the call tomorrow.
Good, thank you.
At this time, we are showing no further questions.
Thank you. We have time for one question. Let's maybe hang out for 30 seconds and see if we get another question. If you have a question, you push what, star 1?
Yes, ma'am. If you have a question, press star 1 and record your name and affiliation.
So this is Wendy Stovall. I'm just going to follow up and say that I haven't heard back yet about the either the 130 cracks or the height of the spatter ramparts or the cones. So I'd just suggest maybe whomever was asking those questions, just email our volcanomedia@usgs.gov, and we'll hopefully reply with a definitive answer for you within the next few hours.
We do have a question from Steve Gorman from Reuters. Your line is now open.
Hi, I'm sorry. Forgive me if you said this at the very top of the thing, but I take it the PGV, again, from the latest civil defense thing, it said that the threat there, and there's no immediate threat of any wells there, so I assume that the crews got the last of the pressurized well heads capped safely, or if just the lava encroachment has just stopped on its own, or can anybody tell us what's going on there? I don't know if you can or not.
Go ahead, Leslie. I can answer a little bit on the geology side if you want to touch the PGV.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so I don't know what the latest is on the well capping. In a press conference yesterday, they said they were working on it. But the geology side of things, we had some interesting information come in from our deformation team, which is that in the area of Fissure 22, which was close to the PGV site, it is the one that's producing the highest fountains, but it's also producing the highest wall, the spatter rampart, and the cone on that north side. So it's really blocking the lava from going to the north, and the volume of the lava from that vent is going to the south. The other thing that's happening in that area is that the area to the south of that spatter rampart, just to the south, has started to downdrop a little bit, and it's partially due to that widening that I mentioned at the top of the hour where we're noticing some widening in the rift zone. But the topography of the land, so the preliminary results of those drone overflights that we were talking about, that's doing the changes in topography, has noticed that it's actually dropped down in the area of those fissures. So that's preferentially making, the primary body of lava coming out of those vents go all to the south. So that's something new that we found out.
Okay.
Overnight.
Does that keep it from going away from either populated areas or from the geothermal plant that was of a concern?
Yeah, so the geothermal plant is north of the line of fissures.
I see. So it's actually sort of being protected by this naturally created wall
yes.
from the lava spatter.
Yes.
Okay. That's interesting. Thanks.
This is Leslie Gordon, and I do want to add that the USGS and the Hawaii Volcano Observatory are not at all involved with what's going on at the Puna Geothermal Ventures plant or wells. There's been talk about, you asked about what they're doing in capping wells, and really we don't. No, we've not been involved with any of that. So you'll need to really, they'll have to speak for themselves, contact them, or contact the Hawaii County Civil Defense. Civil Defense is working closely with them and has the latest update on any hazards and what's going on out there. Any more questions before we call it an end today?
We do have a question from Justin Duty with The Wave at 92 FM.
Thank you. Let's have this be our last question, please.
Hi. I'm a resident of the Big Island, and I know that the entire Hawaiian Islands, they are spread over a larger area than the width of the state of Texas. The Big Island has one of the biggest cattle ranches in the United States on it. It's a really big island. A consistent message has been that this is a very isolated event on the Big Island, and I was just checking Hawaiian Airlines and saw that tickets round trips to Kona International Airport are like $600 or less. And with cruise ships coming back to Hilo June 6, departures of those ships will be viewing lava entry from the ocean at night. Lava boat tours are happening right now, and this seems like a great time to book a trip to Hawaii. What would you like the people who are considering coming to the Big Island or the state to know about potential bookings of their vacations, their summer holidays? And this is really for anyone.
I can take this one. Definitely exactly what you said.
This is Ross Birch speaking?
Yes, it is.
Go ahead. I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, so they can definitely book plans as scheduled, or this would be a perfect time to actually come to the island. Unfortunately, our number one attraction is not available at this time, but who knows when that opportunity may come up. But it is. It's a great time. Hotel rooms haven't really started dropping pricing yet. They're still pretty steady, but many of the airlines are starting to do some really good airfares from the mainland to the island. So great time to pick that up.
And, I mean, in a USGS perspective about this, because you guys are here. You guys know you're on this island. You know how big it is, and you know how isolated the event is. What would you tell people who are considering coming to the island?
This is Wendy Stovall. I actually work out of the Cascades Volcano Observatory, and I did lots of work on Kilauea during my grad school years. And one thing that impressed me was even last night when there was a community meeting in Pahoa, and I went down and I was right in Pahoa, right close to where these lava flows are happening. You can still go grocery shopping at the stores down there, and there was this eerie glow in the sky from these lava fountains, and this event that's happening in Hawaii is a generational event, and it's something that is impacting the local community very heavily, and I would not hesitate to come to Hawaii. I mean, of course I'm here, and this is me kind of speaking a little bit more personally, but I think it's important for people to know that if you're coming to enjoy the beaches or if you're coming to eat delicious food, none of that is going to be impacted by what's going on here. And it's really just this very small area in, you know, the southeastern corner of, or the eastern edge of the island, and then at the summit of Kilauea that are experiencing these issues. So the typical places that people go for vacations are not going to be the places that are closed because of this eruption.
This is Leslie Gordon, and I can add just a little bit to that. There is a lot of good information on the Hawaii Volcanoes Observatory website about any of the hazards that exist, and you will see that they're very localized. There is, of course, always a hazard of ash. That's why the park is closed. There's a hazard of laze or lava haze at the ocean entries where lava is spewing into the ocean. There's a serious hazard. There are hazards breathing the fumes from the volcanoes, the sulfur dioxide and other gases. So please do check the website. Those are the things that we can answer concretely or definitively what the hazards are. And advise you to stay out of the middle of those hazards.
This is Wendy Stovall again. I want to add one more thing about laze, and I feel like this is something that's been a little bit misconstrued in the media. So the laze plume that's issuing forth from the ocean entry is the same plume that issued forth from the ocean entry during the duration of the Pu'u'o'o event. And I talked about this at the top of the call, and there was very little attention paid to it when Pu'u'o'o was erupting. And I don't know why there's more attention being paid to it. I mean, certainly it's a hazard. It's something that people should be aware of, but the plume itself is going to impact the area just immediately around the plume. So if you see the plume, you stay clear of the plume. It's not going to travel like Vog. It's not going to go around the island. It's really a very localized thing. And most of the area that is in the downwind direction, as long as the trades are blowing, is evacuated. There are some people that are still in their homes that are not in the evacuated zone that could potentially be impacted by the lays. But this is not a reason to cancel your vacation to Hawaii.
Thank you very much for your kind words. I really appreciate it in the perspective. We really need people coming to our island and people not being afraid. And there's a lot of meat. There's all gloom and doom out there. So thank you.
You're welcome.
Leslie, this is Jessica Farrakhan. I wanted to add to the reasons the park is closed. It is not just because of ash. There's actually several reasons. Two-thirds of the park is closed at this time due to increased seismic activity, the continued ash fall, as well as the expected steam-driven explosion at the summit of Kilauea. So it's really three-pronged, not just for one reason. I just wanted to make sure that media understand that.
Thank you, Jessica. I do want to call an end to this phone briefing. We've gone past our allotted time. Please do join us again tomorrow. It'll be the same dial-in phone number and the same passcode, and we'll have time for more questions tomorrow. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
This now concludes today's call. All lines may disconnect at this time.